exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here is today's Education Matters moderator.
I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD HD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, at 91.1 on your FM dial and 101.7 in Elkhorn and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. Before we begin, I want to indicate that this program was recorded this previous Thursday. Our program today focuses on the challenges faced by non-traditional adult students in completing a college-university degree. Ms. Tracy Rybar, our first guest today, decided that she was going to work on a bachelor's degree at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside at the same time her children were enrolled at a university as traditional students. Our second guest is Dr. Kristen Holmberg-Wright, one of Tracy's professors who ultimately became a friend and now a colleague. Welcome to you both to Education Matters and the important topic of non-traditional students.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Good to have you with us there. To get started today, Tracy, will you tell our listeners about what motivated you to go to college as an adult who was well along in marriage, business, and raising children?
In my particular case, it had a lot to do with the time of life that I was in. My youngest began driving, and so I had a fear. I'm from the county, and I had experienced a sense of freedom I had not had previously. Due to the company, you know, the family company, I was required to be there. So now I had some freedom, and I decided what I wanted to do. And I looked at some of the want ads on even online, and just realized that education might be the way to go. And I always enjoyed learning, so I thought about that. And I investigated UWM and Whitewater and Cardinal Stritch and of course, Parkside.
Okay. And how about Carthage College? Did you get as far as Carthage College or not?
To be quite honest, I thought Carthage College would probably be out of my price range.
Okay. So it was economy, in a sense, then was an issue then in terms of choosing your college university.
Yes, when you go back to school as an adult, and we'll talk about this later in the program, but one of the challenges that you have is the feeling that you're spending resources from the family. You know, I had traditional students in college and was helping with their tuition.
Right.
And if they had decided Carthage was for them, I would have moved heaven and earth to make that happen. However, for myself, I just didn't see the investment.
Okay, so you anticipated my next question about what were your concerns as you entered on your university education, and funding was certainly one of those concerns.
It is a concern. You're taking family resources, and you're investing them in yourself, but at the same time, especially in our culture, that children are important, and they should be.
Right.
So to do that for yourself, you have to figure that. You have to figure that you're doing the role model.
Uh-huh.
Some of the other concerns I had were, and I think almost anyone could relate to it, is could I study again?
Ah.
How would I do with testing?
Yeah.
Things like math. I had figured tonnage and profit margins.
All kinds of things in your business.
In my business, but I can tell you the quadratic equation had not come up in a number of years.
Oh, yes.
The English portion was I tested out of the English because as a mom, I had edited papers for years.
Yes.
So and I was my English skills came before the spell check and grammar check. That was in my head. So that's a big your initial concern is just that.
Okay.
And just fear of being on a campus with I didn't realize how many that there would be other non-traditionals and just.
So you thought that you would be the only person among these 18, 19, and 20-year-olds.
And I thought they'd look at me like, who is that crazy old woman?
Uh-huh.
And that's a big concern.
Yes, exactly.
And how would I relate to them? That type of thing.
Right.
And could I do it? I know it's just very interesting, how I would do that. My first couple of tests, I think I got 110% because I overstudied.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Right, you know. So psychologically, it's really, you go through a lot of processes in terms of thinking about going to college as an adult student.
You do, and there's a big challenge because the college system is set up for someone who came out of high school and has certain learning outcomes. And it isn't set up for people who've learned a lot outside of college.
Yeah, okay. My
first math course I was warned by an advisor, and I did brush up on my math because I didn't want to test too low.
Yes.
But I didn't want to test too high.
Yes.
And I tested, and if it could have been perfect, I should have been placed in that course about halfway through it.
Okay. Now, that's an interesting idea. I didn't want to test too low. I didn't want to test too high, you know, because otherwise I'd get placed in a course that maybe was more challenging than I wanted.
And then I had to take a course that relied on the learning outcomes from the previous course, and
yes.
I would be really in over my head. On the other hand, first of all, to test too low, I didn't want to be too bored.
Yes.
Secondly, as you know, it would have put my whole progress back. I was already not a spring chicken. So I didn't want to, you know, expand my time to graduation more necessary because one math course led on to another.
Right. So efficiency then was an issue then as far as you're going through the program too.
When I first went back to school, my whole thought was I'm going to get in, get it done, and get out.
Okay.
I had no idea how it would change my life.
Isn't that interesting? We'll talk about that as we move on. So what did you find most interesting and challenging in those first years?
Most interesting was how much I enjoyed the experience.
Great.
I never anticipated that. It was all of a sudden I was having a great time.
Uh-huh.
My original goal to get in, get out, and get it done and sit in the back and keep my mouth shut lasted
2 minutes, huh?
2 minutes in my first history class when we got into discussion of something. And just to do that was very, very fun. And then the interactions with my younger study colleagues was very interesting in the beginning. At first, they don't know what to make of you.
Uh-huh.
And then they start to notice how you're doing, and then they want to be in your study group.
Okay, right. Because they know that you know how to study, and you know you've learned this stuff, and you can help them.
Yeah, and they could help me.
Exactly.
So it was wonderful. I did a lot of YouTube is every adult student's best friend.
Uh-huh.
Because the tech things I didn't know I would YouTube.
Yes.
And one of them told me to do it. I wouldn't even have thought to YouTube because I never looked at YouTube before.
Is that right?
Yeah, and so they said YouTube it, and I went, oh, my God, this is wonderful. You can do anything from YouTube.
So you got into technology then as a result of doing this program.
Oh, definitely.
And see, now you're in the With It generation today.
Yeah, I was. I'm Facebook friends with these people. I tweet.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So it was they're a lot of fun.
It added dimensions then to your life.
I wound up going on a study abroad with 14, 20-somethings and me.
Uh-huh. Great.
Yeah, and I went to bed early.
There you go. Looking at the list of non-traditional students' fears in your research paper that you and Dr. Holmberg Wright prepared, what were those that affected you the most, those that were listed in your paper?
After the initial fear of being able to study, the biggest fear that affected me and I think affects other non-trads is that feeling of not belonging, of not
really
having a place on that campus.
Uh-huh. So that's an issue maybe that campuses need to think about, colleges and universities need to think about, is making sure that they're welcoming to non-traditional students.
I completely agree. And it's not that they're unwelcoming.
Yes.
It's to realize that they need to have address that there are different needs for non-trads.
Okay. Okay, good. Let's move on then. Our second guest is Dr. Kristen Holmberg Wright, who is a distinguished lecturer in management and organization behavior in the College of Business, Economics, and Computing at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. First, tell our listeners about your background, and then we'll move on to your work with Ms. Rybar.
Yes, I'm from the Chicagoland area, southwest of Chicago. I went to the great University of Illinois and got all of three of my degrees there. From Illinois, while at Illinois, I worked for the president, John Corbally, and moved on to Indiana University, where I was going to be a professor, but became the assistant to the president at Indiana University under John Ryan. So I kind of went immediately into administration, taught like an adjunct every semester at either the School of Education or the School of Public and Environmental Affairs, and after that, my husband moved to South Bend to work at Notre Dame, and I decided to get out of higher ed and go into healthcare administration, part of my doctorate was in adult education.
Okay.
And so that's where I probably got my initial interest in the non-trads or adult students.
Okay.
We were there for quite a while. I was started at the Catholic healthcare facility as the director of education and training, then moved to the public healthcare facility because they were getting into total quality management, which was very exciting to me at the time. We then were going to move to Racine, and I was thinking of being a professor, found out I was pregnant with twins, and best decision of my life was to stay home and be a
there you
home
go.
Mom for a while.
Raise the kids and
absolutely,
get them.
What was wonderful.
So, and then now you're free and can do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, and so as you know, as the kids got more involved in school, I, you know, Tracy goes back to school and I go back to teach at school, and I became a lecturer at University of Wisconsin-Parkside and have been there ever since.
So how did the two of you meet, and what happened as a result of that meeting then?
Should I do that? We met. She was my professor for a class that I didn't really want to take. It's organizational behavior, and I thought, oh, that's psychobabble.
So why did
junk.
You take it?
I had to.
Always required.
And I was just taken in. Uh-huh. I was, wow. I just loved it. Uh-huh. And I hadn't anticipated that. So that was wonderful. So and I could relate to her. She talked about we had kids the same age. She had a daughter, kids in Madison. I had a daughter in Madison. And that type of thing. But how we really got to know each other is it was just about this time that I was I had applied and really hadn't told anybody on campus to be on the Board of Regents.
Okay.
So I filled out the application, and I had heard from the governor's office that they wanted to interview me. Well, unfortunately, fortunately, we take a vacation to Florida every year. My husband's business, our family business, is very summer-based.
Uh-huh.
So we book a Florida vacation, and I was going to be in Florida during this vacation, and I tried to get the governor's office to move the interview, but they do them all in one day, so that wasn't possible.
Uh-huh.
So it was a phone interview, and she was my professor at the time, and I said, you have to help me. I tried for this regent thing, and I have a phone interview, and do you have any suggestions? And she gave me such amazing suggestions that I was asked to be on the Board of Regents with they never saw me.
Isn't that interesting?
All from, just like your radio here, all
wonderful.
From The Voice.
Okay, and so from your perspective then, you worked with her then in terms of this activity.
Right.
And then from there on?
From there on, well, then she had an independent study.
Uh-huh.
And
doing what?
Well, that we were in.
On soft skills. I approached
yeah.
her and said, I really enjoyed your course, and I have one spot left in my schedule.
Uh-huh.
And do you teach anything else? And she said, not that would apply, but would you consider an independent study, which I didn't even realize that was a possibility. And so we talked about our interests, and I had been on the board for a while at that time.
Yes.
And I had seen how some real amazing people didn't present very well.
Ah.
And how important soft skills could be. I mean, people who present to the Board of Regents are very accomplished.
Yes.
And to see that some of those skills, even in them, and then they would even talk about needing those skills, and that would come up at board level. So we decided to do the paper on that, because I said so many of my peers thought they had amazing soft skills, presentation skills, when maybe I'm older, but I didn't.
Uh-huh.
So that was the basis of our research to
yes.
see did they think that were their soft skills as well? Were their soft skills as well as they thought they were?
And so that's what you did your independent study in then.
Yeah, so she did that, and we ended up publishing a paper and presented, and we just enjoyed being together, had a few glasses of wine along the way, and became friends.
Okay.
Read some great books.
Yeah, I think that's the nice thing, you know, having to deal with non-traditional students is, as a faculty member, you know, you have a chance to make friends.
Yes.
You know, with the younger students, you know, they're the age of my kids. You know, and I treat them like kids.
Yeah.
Where with the non-traditionals, it really is very different the way I find myself relating to
them.
More
of a peer.
More of a peer. You know, more that they have a lot to offer me as I do them.
And so then you offered something to her that would be good for non-traditional students, and that was simply an independent study.
Right.
Something that she had not even considered.
No, but I also knew she was a really good student. You know,
yes.
I knew I could work with her in an independent capacity, trust her.
And you'd get quality work.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah, that's a very important part of it, too, from the professor's
that's
perspective.
True.
Okay, so let's talk about, let's move on to your recent research on non-traditional students. First of all, tell our listeners what a non-traditional student is.
Well, usually we think traditional students, 18 to 24 years old, coming straight out of, you know, high school with a high school degree or diploma. Non-traditional, for the most part, you know, they're going to be somewhat older. A lot of times they're from the military. You know, they're coming back to school. Could be single parents. It could be someone who's worked for a while and now wants to go back and get a degree. Right now I have a person in one of my classes who has a degree but wants to change to get a business degree.
Switching careers.
I noticed through the recession there was a lot more non-traditionals coming back who might have lost their jobs with the recession, came back to re-educate themselves. To give themselves
skills that they didn't have
wanted
to sharpen.
Right, and they wanted to make sure they were marketable.
Yes.
So, you know, non-traditionals, right now they say approximately 40% of your higher ed enrollment is non-traditional students.
And your paper didn't say
growing.
That, I don't think, did it?
I'm not sure.
I remember that.
But it's growing, you know, by, you know, 2020, we're expecting, you know, in excess of 60%. And what, you know, I think that's what got us really interested is the fact that we were seeing a lot of universities, including somewhat our own, not realizing, you know, you've got this growth population, you've got a decreased population of the traditional student.
The 18-year-old graduating from high school because those enrollments are going down.
Are going down when you look at the high school enrollments. So, you know, and recognizing there's going to be changes in, you know, the ages, the backgrounds, the motivation of students, you know, what are universities going to do about it to make it a positive for everybody, a win-win?
I was not aware of those figures, you know, in terms of the non-traditional students getting to be such numbers.
Well, a lot of times non-traditionals also go part-time.
Yes.
And so they may not always get put in, you know, the percentages and the count.
Yes. Well, and before we went on to the air, I told them about my daughter who just finished a degree in Spanish at the University of Minnesota, and she did it after her regular work hours then and so forth. So she was a non-traditional student terms of that degree.
Yeah.
So on. So it just, I guess it pops up almost naturally.
No, it does. I agree with you. You know, and the whole thing is, you know, what do we want people to understand is we have to learn all our life.
Yes, exactly.
You know, learning does not stop. And, you know, I think the traditional way of thinking years ago, decades ago, was you got your degree and that was it.
Yeah. Well, and the world didn't move as fast then as I think it does now and as it's going to do as we move into the future.
Right.
Tracy, do you want to add anything to our discussion here?
No, I agree, and especially with your comment that the world changes. And that's why I see it a degree, a bachelor's degree, is so vital because you have to learn that you can learn, and you have to keep changing. My first job was a car hop.
Is that right? Okay.
And I don't think there are any around anymore. Yeah. So if I had been trained only to be a car hop,
that was very limited.
My job, I made $1.75 an hour as a car hop, that's gone.
Yes.
And joking aside, but people, what you're doing, what you're training for now will probably be different or not exist in a few years. And that's, instead of seeing that as a threat, I see it as an opportunity and a challenge.
Yeah, you can build on what you did before and its new challenges and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so what motivates non-traditional students to seek college degrees? Now, we've talked about some of that. Anything more that motivates them? Maybe a better salary.
A better salary is one thing. A lot of it is intrinsic. I work right now at Parkside because I fell in love with higher ed, and I work in the teacher education area.
Okay.
And we'll get non-traditionals in who are at a point in their lives where they want to give back. They want to teach.
Do something more meaningful?
To them, yes.
Okay.
Not that every person's job can be meaningful. I don't want to imply that at all. But we get, and I think one thing that could be addressed more are career changers. And it can be extremely difficult to be a career changer when it becomes time to get that job because everyone sees your previous experience. And I was in school with someone who was a warehouse worker, and he went for a business degree and a computer science degree, and he did very well. And he was having trouble getting a job outside the warehousing industry because all they saw was this warehouse experience. And he actually spoke to me and he said, should I take it off my resume? And but then it looks like you haven't done anything.
Yes.
And in my case, it was hard to find a niche outside, say, the transportation industry because that's what I had done. But people want to change. Okay. I think it's natural and it's healthy to want to evolve and change.
Well, it's called growth, I guess, isn't it?
Yes.
You know,
think of all the things you may have done over your life and different things.
Yes.
And it just it makes life wonderful.
Right. It's enriching, and that sort of thing. Okay.
Yes.
So how did your research on non-traditional students come into being? So how did you get to this topic together?
That probably was partially my fault. I was the non-traditional student representative on the Board of Regents. So in my role as a regent, I did work with advancing the needs and causes of non-traditional students. And I worked with the early infancy of flex option and some of the other needs. But I really thought to myself that it has to be an all-encompassing thing. You can't just say, oh, well, non-traditionals can't come during the day, so let's have a lot of online classes. That isn't the answer.
Uh-huh.
Online classes are a piece, but that isn't the answer. It's a whole looking. I see higher ed, and we talked about this when I got to meet. We were together at a senior faculty lunch.
Right.
And higher ed is a service industry at its base. So you basically have to look, who are my customer bases? What could my customers be? And then reach out to them. What do we need to make this happen? What do we need to have, as Dr. Holmgren Wright described, the win-win situation?
Yes.
And I think the other thing that got us probably more honest than I probably should be, they did a plan for, you know, the physical plant at Parkside, and they wanted to put in a very expensive fireplace. And I remember thinking, no! Non-traditionals are not coming for a fireplace.
Okay.
They're coming for services. They're coming for courses that are relevant. They're coming for so much more than a fireplace.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's how we really began talking about, you know, we have to open people's thinking to realize non-traditionals don't care about the facility particularly. They care about the services within the facility.
And that the facility serves the function that it needs to, providing a place for a class or an activity or whatever. But beyond that.
Yeah. But you're not going to know that if you don't ask them.
Yes.
And so we talked to a lot of non-traditional students and trying to find out what it was they were looking for, you know, what excited them, what didn't, you know, what motivated them. And, you know, hoping that people would pay attention and realize the services become very important. You know, the way the treatment becomes very important. And so, you know, and actually, you know, it worked in many ways to our advantage because we were asked to come to Roosevelt University after we had published this paper. They wanted to hear.
Yes.
Parkside, I think, has begun to change some of the way they've approached non-traditional students.
So it's caused people to think differently about education.
It is a service organization. There was a wonderful summit held at Wingspread a couple weeks ago. And Gateway, Carthage, Parkside were there with some representatives from UW colleges. And they had a panel of non-traditional students. I was one. There was a wonderful gentleman from Carthage and a young woman from Gateway.
Okay.
And Brian Albright was there. And it was just a wonderful exchange of ideas about how we can make that happen. And I challenge that group, and I challenge your listeners that might be to think that a big part of it is a culture shift.
It's a paradigm shift. I mean, it's,
yes.
You know,
yes.
When I was educated, you know, you were expected to go to college. Once college was done, you were going to work.
Yes.
You know, and
it's been the rest of your life working.
Yeah, yeah, and the same job probably.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's not the issue anymore. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, and because the world is changing so rapidly and getting smaller and moving faster.
Yes, and being in many ways probably more exciting.
Exactly.
Yeah, and courses need to be offered. You can't offer them on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 2.
Okay, they got to be more flexibility.
We use the analogy that if we went to a hotel and they, you know, and you didn't get there between 10 and 2 on a Tuesday and Thursday, you couldn't check in. I mean, it wouldn't work that way. And I'm not saying we need classes in the middle of the night, but you do need to come have some flexibility to say, yes, we can offer courses after work. We can maybe stack courses. Some of the things that would make it easier for non-traditionals to complete because, as was mentioned, and Dr. Homework Wright has found out that retention is a big issue with non-traditionals.
Okay, they want that gets to my next question. Right. Tell our listeners about retention.
Retention is an issue because, you know, they go to school part-time.
Yes.
Things get in the way. You know, they've got family responsibilities, work responsibilities, financial responsibilities. And so, you know, they may drop in, drop out. You know, I remember reading an article about Michael Dell from Dell Computer. He was going to, I think, a university in Houston. And, you know, he dropped out to start Dell Computer. And he wanted to go back to Houston, and they wouldn't let him in.
Oh, my.
Because it had been too many years. Well, you know, my goodness, you know, uh-huh. If Michael Dell can't get back in, get ready for other people. You know, and that's the thing. You know, you may not be able to do it the traditional way. And so we do have to help them to come up with ways that we can retain them and give them the chance to drop out and drop back in when it's appropriate.
Okay. And in your paper, you had a section on how adults learn, and you used the word andragogy. What's that? Did I pronounce it correctly?
You did, andragogy. Pedagogy is what, you know, we've been, you know, what I was trained in to, you know, is where it's very teacher-orientated and, you know, you prepare and you offer and you know what everybody needs to know.
And you spout knowledge, beauty, and truth to the students.
Exactly.
The sage on the stage.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
And andragogy is where, you know, adult students, you know, want applicability, they want it relevant. You know, they want to take part. They want to be respected for their experience. You know, yes, I may have a doctoral degree, but it doesn't mean, you know, so I might have smarts, but I might not have schmarts. You
well,
know, and that non-traditional,
area,
they've got schmarts,
yeah.
You know, and let them share it.
Yes.
And so it's more, that's more what andragogy is about relative to adults.
Okay, so you also identified six variables most important to adult learning. Tell our listeners about some of those. You know, what do you see as the most important variables?
One of the most important variables is, she touched on it, respecting what they know and letting them contribute. To realize when you, as an adult, when you go to school, it's not so much about the grade. You're there to learn. Think about it, if you hire someone to do a service at your home, and they don't do it well, but
yeah.
They say, well, that, you know, that's okay, you know, and that, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. I'm not in here to get a letter that doesn't really mean a lot to me at this point in my life. What I'm here to do is to learn.
And you know what's interesting on that is I've had non-traditional students who've like gotten an A, and they'll still want to know why they got the A and what they could have done better.
Yes.
You know, because they want to learn in so many capacities and grow. Maybe learning and growth being maybe two different,
yes,
different avenues. So they definitely want that. They want, you know, they want the teacher's respect for what they've done and who they are,
yes,
and where they've been. And I do find, you know, I love to have them in classes because they do contribute. You know, like I'll ask a question in class and people will sit there like saying nothing. And it's like, come on, give me something to work with. And it's always the non-traditional that comes through and gives me something to work with.
Okay. That's a very good point, you know, because they can illustrate the point that a professor is trying to make, you know, and with an example from their own life experience.
Or they'll ask you the question. That even makes, you know, me up front think, whoa, you know,
yes,
I got to think this one through, because even I didn't go down that avenue.
And sometimes they're more brave. Are they more brave than maybe the traditional students are? It depends on the student.
Yeah, it's going to depend.
Yeah.
You know, because again, you're going to have some that feel that they, you know, should take a backstage to the traditional students, or they don't want to be seen as, you know, trying to overtake the professor.
Yes.
So it really does somewhat depend.
Or dominate the discussion or whatever it might be. Any other variables that you want to talk about as most important for adult learning? Respecting what they know is, I think, wonderful.
Letting them contribute. You know, I do try, like if I'm doing group works, you know, I will try and mix it up so that, you know, traditional students are having to work with a non-traditional.
And spreading the non-traditionals out so
right.
that they're not all in one group?
Right.
Okay.
And a lot of times you will have to do that because, you know, the traditional students don't always bond with the non-traditionals. And so if you're letting them do their own grouping, they may not think to include them. Though I'm seeing that changing a lot, I think, because we are getting more non-traditionals.
One of the best groups I had was it was a two-person group, and a young man who I didn't even know walked up and said, "Would you like to be my group partner for our final project?"
Ah.
And I looked at him and thought, oh, gosh. And I said yes. And he was a young MIS major, so Management Information Systems. So he and I was, we just made a great paper because we took his tech skills and my old school type skills and put them together.
Balanced the two, huh?
And we had, and it was such a wonderful thing. And one night my computer broke. And I really needed it. My dog sat on it. I'm not kidding. My dog sat on my computer and it broke. And I couldn't plug it in. And I called him, and I came to the dorm, and he took it apart. He took a piece of masking tape, and he fixed it.
Uh-huh.
Andrew Fox, if you're listening, I still thank you for that. And we just had a great partnership and a great great experience.
So you make great friendships as a result of all of this.
Oh, yes. Across the generations, which is very something I had anticipated and pretty fun. I was invited to a 21st party.
There you go. Exactly.
I took my husband. We left by 9:30.
Wonderful.
But it was very nice.
Right. At this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters live on WGTD HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. We are not live. We're taping on Thursday, by the way. Today, I'm visiting Tracy Rybar, who recently completed her bachelor's degree at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside as a non-traditional student. Dr. Holmberg Wright, our second guest, is distinguished lecturer in management and organization in the College of Business, Economics, and Computing at UW-Parkside and was one of Ms. Rybar's instructors along the way. Since then, Dr. Wright and Ms. Rybar have collaborated on research addressing issues facing non-traditional college students. Now back to our program. We only have about 15 minutes left, and I've got only half of the questions covered. So we need to move on. Looking at this question about the November 10th issue of the Racine Journal Times had an excellent story about a non-traditional UW-Parkside student who recommended a professor from the theater department for an award because of his willingness to work with her in terms of UW-Parkside's course demands and the demands of her National Guard unit. Doesn't this really make the point that faculty and their academic departments need to be flexible to accommodate non-traditional students?
It does. At the same time, it's not always easy.
To be flexible.
Right. Because I remember two years ago or so, I was finding that students were coming in late, and so I thought, okay, I'm going to have on-time attendance. You got to be here on time. Then I had a woman who was a bus driver.
Uh-huh.
Well, in bad weather, she wasn't going to be on time. And in the same class, there was a man, and he was a single parent. And when he had his young son, he had to get him to school. And all of a sudden, I realized, okay, on-time attendance for some probably is important because you do want to teach them, you got to be on time. You can't come to work late.
Yes.
But the non-traditional, they've got so many balls that they're, they've got in the air.
Yes.
And so I had to really think through, okay, how do I do this exactly to give the lesson to my traditional students while allowing the non-traditionals that flexibility? And that it isn't easy. I mean, you're going to make mistakes.
Right.
And you're going to learn from them, hopefully.
Yeah, and you might make mistakes with certain people. Certain students might take advantage of you.
Correct.
But it makes also the point that non-traditional student needs to share with you what his or her issues are.
Yes.
Because if they don't, then you can be very unhappy with them for whatever is happening.
Yeah, no, and that's what I mean. It's, you're going to make mistakes. Hopefully you learn from them.
Okay. Let's talk about online courses as a part of non-traditional programs. So what are their strengths and what are their challenges? And I never was, as a faculty member, for 28 and a half years at UW-Parkside, I never was engaged in a online course. So I really, and I'm not sure I'm very excited about that idea.
I'll start with this one.
Yes.
Online courses, strengths and weaknesses, in one word, is flexibility. It's a strength and it's a weakness.
Yeah.
Okay.
The strength is just what it sounds like. You can do the work anywhere. You can do it anytime. I took an online course in a horse stall in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
Because I was down there with my daughter for a horse show.
Sure.
However, that very flexibility is a weakness because you can do it anytime. So in your busy life, there's no set time for it. So, the kids need this. My job needs this. Pretty soon you're doing your work at 2 or 3 in the morning. And some of the students that we interviewed, this came out. So that's an interesting part. So I think they're an important piece, but they're not the answer.
No. Not the entire answer.
Is it a great thing? And I know some of the courses are going to blended, where it's partially in class. And I know some of our education courses at Parkside will be doing that soon. And I think are already doing that. And that is an interesting piece, too. And I think even my courses, I'm in the graduate program right now, are blended. Where we'll have online discussions, but we still meet.
And the thing about, when we did our research too, talking to the non-traditional students, what they like is the interchange in a classroom.
Uh-huh.
They like, seeing people talking, contributing, and they don't feel the energy comes when they're online. So, if you are going to do that, if you can, use hybrid or blending courses, I think that's a great way of going. At the same time, one of my concerns is I see too many colleges and universities thinking that's the wave,
yes.
Is online.
Or that's the wave of the future.
Yeah. If that's our future, I have some questions.
Good luck, huh?
I have some questions.
Maybe what we do is we tend to go too far one way.
And then
we end up settling back in the middle, but
we
have to do this before we can do this.
Yeah.
During my graduate work, it's interesting to me that in every course I've taken, a huge part of it is that interpersonal communication skills or soft skills. Those are really difficult to acquire online.
And you can't acquire them if you're not practicing them.
Well, and one of the things I think about, not having done this, is that, you read students' faces, too, as a professor. You read their faces, and you can see when they've got an idea, but they're not quite ready to share it, and you can call on them and that sort of thing. Whereas the situation with online, you don't know that.
No. And even online, you may not know it's a non-traditional student.
Yes. So on. So anything else on this issue of online courses?
Again, as we've shared that I don't want to be saying that online is terrible. It's not. It's really
it has its place.
It has its place, and it's a really important place. It gives you the option to take a course that maybe Parkside could never offer because
there wouldn't be enough students interested.
And I know my daughter, who is in graduate work with me right now, is very interested in some of the international type courses she can take online.
Uh-huh.
As far as international e-commerce, which Parkside. So that part is so great, but it is not the panacea. It's not. I think you're right with the pendulum swing. We need to kind of go in the center.
Okay.
I recently heard somebody speak about the MOOCs, massive online courses that are offered like through MIT and Harvard. And what they talked about was the fact that a lot of non-traditional students signed up for them. They weren't even in a degree program.
Yes.
So they were just older people, older students, I guess. And they didn't all, majority of them did not complete the course, but they loved the course, that they had this chance for free to interact. And so, I think that also, relative to degrees, using technology, there's, it depends on what the motivation, or the intention is of that person taking the course. Maybe we do offer things like that might not be part of a degree program, but allow people the chance to learn and share.
And to certainly offer it to them and let them know that it's available. Why don't you tell our listeners what MOOCs are, just in case somebody doesn't know?
Massively online open courses.
Okay. Offered by colleges and universities, usually many times with very famous professors
Very famous professors. I started one myself thinking, this will be so cool. but woof, it went over my head.
And sometimes very esoteric topics that you can't get
right
15 or 25 students on the Parkside campus or even Madison campus to be interested in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they'll get thousands of people for the course.
Yes. And so people, I suppose, get what they want out of it. And,
yeah,
and then
they move on. And it doesn't cost. A lot of times the MOOCs don't cost anything.
Yeah. So I here's a question that I have, and our time is really going rapidly here. If the two of you were to receive a grant of $25,000 for the next 2 years, $25,000, to be used to develop a program for non-traditional students at UW-Parkside, how would you invest that money? What would you do with the resources that could buy for 2 years?
I mean, there's different ways. We kind of talked, what would we do?
I would love to buy some faculty time.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would love to buy faculty time that faculty are so stretched right now with the resources that the system is dealing with.
Yeah.
And to buy the time to be able to study this and set up courses and options with non-trads in line to help switch that paradigm. Because it's something you can know can happen, but to realize how to do that, that's going to take some big thinking.
Yeah,
it's going to take some training.
It's going to take some research.
And one of the ways, if we were given this wonderful grant, it would be pretty neat to actually have some kind of a institute or whatever you wanted to call it where you had courses that would be traditional and non-traditional. But you really did offer them at times when non-traditionals could be present. You have executive MBA programs that are on weekends and Friday nights. What if we did something like that for degree programs for non-traditional students working on a bachelor's degree? To be able to use money to change the paradigm again of how and when we offer our courses and our programs.
And it would certainly have to be fulfilling for the students because they're not going to waste their time on something that doesn't meet their needs.
And fulfilling for the faculty.
Yeah.
That's the problem you run up against is, so many faculty today want to be traditional faculty.
Yes.
Well, if you're going to deal with non-traditional students, you got to be a non-traditional faculty member.
And if we're getting more non-
And it won't be for everybody, perhaps.
And we're getting more non-traditional students, then that means flexibility or more flexibility on the part of faculty.
And helping faculty to understand adult learning. It is different than the traditional learning. So the money would have to go to professional development and make it fun.
And what?
And make it fun.
Okay. If someone listening today is interested in becoming a non-traditional student at UW-Parkside or somewhere else, how should they proceed? Whom should they contact at Parkside, say? What should they consider?
Well, Parkside does have an admissions counselor just for non-traditionals. Her name is Courtney Payne. And so if they were interested in Parkside.
What's her name again?
Courtney Payne.
Courtney Payne, okay.
Yes. And so that would be something they should do. My biggest advice to someone considering it is it's kind of like the commercial, just do it.
Okay, just do it.
Yeah,
Jump in,
find it, what have you risked. You don't know until you try. Okay. It sounds so corny, but it's true. And then research a school that works in your schedule.
That will be more flexible.
More flexible, response to your needs, and that you have to be able to do it. I know when I was on the board, I got to visit the Hudson Center that River Falls has, and it was located in an area where you could drop your student, your child at ballet class and take a course.
Okay.
It was kind of in that area. And Parkside and UWM, Whitewater, they can all do, throughout the state, and not just the University of Wisconsin system schools, but others as well.
Okay. To our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as we visited with Tracy Rybar, who recently completed her bachelor's degree at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside as a non-traditional college student, and Dr. Kristen Holmberg-Wright, distinguished lecturer in management and organization in the College of Business, Economics, and Computing at UW-Parkside, and one of Ms. Rybar's instructors along the way. Since then, Dr. Holmberg-Wright and Ms. Rybar have collaborated on research addressing issues facing non-traditional college students. Thank you so much for being with us today. This was
Thank
a great
discussion.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you for having us. It was fun.
If you'd like to hear previous Education Matter programs, go to WGTD's website, www.wgtd.org, and click on Talk, and scroll down to Education Matters. Click on Learn More, and you're there. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition
of Education Matters. This is your host, Dwayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Local musicians, get your music on the radio on WGTD's Noon Tunes. It airs Monday through Friday on the